Welcome to the UK's only weekly FM radio show on transportation. I'm Mark Ovenden. Today we're talking with one of Britain's leading strategists who's planning and delivering new and improved road and rail schemes. Welcome to the Catchcast, Kayla Bibby.
Hi Mark, thanks so much for having me. Really excited to be here.
We're really pleased you could make it. Thanks for joining us direct from Liverpool. Kayla, we're going to get into your pretty astounding career, founding the North Star Rail Alliance and integrating networks and sustainability, among many other things. But I seem to start by asking all my guests on the show a very similar first question. And that is, how and when did you originally get interested in transport and architecture?
Honestly, it's been here for as long as I can remember. When I was a kid, we used to go round there all over the country with the caravan. My sister would be in the back of the car reading a Bella and Best, and I'd be sitting there reading an atlas. Obviously, it'd start with planning our own journey, but when we'd be going down to Cornwall or the south of France, I'd get completely engrossed in an atlas, looking at kind of where the railway lines, city plans, road network, and just studying how we're all connected together, really. And then I'd be, why does this go here? Why doesn't that connect there? Why have you got to go all the way around the houses to get to that? So I think it's really maps and networks in general fascinates me, really. Looking back now, it's probably, when I think about transport starts today, the connectivity and the network as a whole and how it fits together has fascinated me, really. So by the time I was 16 or 17, I'd already knew I wanted to be planning future transport and infrastructure. So we had two summer placements in Mersey Travel, and it was my proper experience of the transport and industry, and it really confirmed back then that that's where I really wanted to be. So It wasn't a particular one moment. It's pretty much been all my life, really.
Oh, I think I'd love to have been in the back of a car with you when we were kids studying atlases and maps. My dad actually used to give me his old ones, and so I'd be playing I Spy or something with the adults from the stuff we'd seen in the maps, and they'd all be saying, oh, talk about something else, Mark. And so did you follow any childhood interests in your studies or your early work, Kayla?
Yes, I've always been interested in the wider built environments as well. So when I was 18, I saw a job advertised in the Echo for a technician with a civil and structural engineering consultancy called AJP. So I applied for the job, got the job, and they put me through John Moores University doing HNC in civil engineering. That was my first job, really, my first proper job. And then that ended up being a 20-year career with the company.
Wow. So your first jobs then, were they mainly in things like civil and structural engineering?
Yeah, so predominantly buildings and civils based rather than transport infrastructure and buildings as well. So more structures as time went on. But it gave me a fantastic grounding of how major projects are actually designed, coordinated and delivered. So I worked on everything from student accommodations, hospitals, university developments through to major city centre projects. So the scale and complexity grew considerably as my career progressed. But transport's always been at the heart, well, my heart. But alongside my professional career, I was still following up on transport and developing my own ideas in my spare time. And so that side never really went away, really.
Apart from a few landmark high-rises in London, I mean, we had the Post Office Tower, of course, Centre Point, NatWest Tower. Most of the tall structures outside the capital, anyway, tended to be council flats, didn't they? Why do you think the UK didn't really embrace skyscrapers for a while? And how did things like the Beetham Towers change that?
Yeah, I think we didn't really embrace skyscrapers for a very long time, really, did we? I mean, obviously, we had a few tolls in London, but Canary Wharf was the one that kicked it all off, I think. Outside London, though, we just didn't really build at all. But I actually remember Beetham Tower going up, used to see it every day. But at the time, it felt enormous. Obviously, we've got the Liver Building, the Cathedral, Radio City Tower, but this was somewhat different. It was, you know, it was the first modern skyscraper on the skyline that anyone had really seen. So in many ways, it laid the foundations of what was to come. I mean, nowadays, 27 stories doesn't really seem to be a big thing, but back then it was huge. Like, and it's great to see many cities embracing the tolls again. Manchester in particular, obviously, has changed beyond recognition, hasn't it, in the past 20 or 30 years. Liverpool to a lesser extent. But we've seen some really ambitious plans in Liverpool Waters, Wirral Waters, which were very futuristic when first proposed. But over the years have been scaled back, but probably a bit too much in my opinion. But definitely, I think there's a place for properly planned clusters of tall buildings. And what we're seeing at the proposed King's developments in Liverpool, including a 70-storey tower, looks fantastic. So I think that really fits well into the evolving Liverpool skyline. I think we can do something over the water as well, not necessarily just in Wirral Waters, but there's an opportunity for like a sister cluster maybe in Birkenhead Woodside around the Queensway Tunnel ventilation shaft, I think. I think that'd look absolutely fantastic.
Crikey, imagine coming down the Mersey, looking at both banks with incredible skyscrapers either side. It'd be amazing, wouldn't it?
But yeah, it'd be like a gateway. With like the Mersey separating them. But we've got to do it properly, though. I mean, Liverpool's got one of the most recognised skylines in the world, so I'm all for building tall, but it's got to be uniquely Liverpool and adds to the skyline. But you got that standalone Queensway air shaft, though, on the Whittle that we call, well, we call that the skyscraper, but, I mean, that was built nearly 100 years ago. You know, we should be building loads of skyscrapers around that.
Yeah, that would be great. Now, I think the UK's tallest building, the Shard, opened in 2009. And obviously, it's not a patch on the super talls elsewhere, maybe, but amazing for the UK. And we're getting a handful of 200-metre high towers in Britain too now, aren't we? Do you think we'll ever top the Shard's 300 metres?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think we will eventually, but when you look at being what's built elsewhere around the world, 300 metres isn't particularly extraordinary anymore. I mean, if it's going to happen anywhere outside of London now, it's going to be Manchester, mm-hmm. in my opinion. But I mean, just look how dramatically and rapidly that skyline's changed over the last 20 years. It's fantastic, isn't it? The growth and the scale of it.
Yeah, it's a very modern-looking city now, it's got to be said. You're tremendously proud of your Liverpudlian roots, Kayla. Give us a little pricey of some of the true gems of Merseyside life that perhaps some of us who don't live right where you do are not so familiar with.
Oh, absolutely. I'm incredibly proud to be being from Liverpool. I mean, people obviously know the Beatles, the football clubs, and the waterfronts, but there's so much more to the city than that. I think the biggest thing is the personality of the place. I mean, Liverpool has this incredible sense of identity and got our own humour, our own way of speaking, and people are fiercely proud about where they're from. So for me, it's the best city in the world. We've got amazing architecture, parks, beach up the coast, we've got the Whittle over the water, North Wales practically on our doorstep. And the music and the nightlife scene's absolutely fantastic. But ultimately, I think Liverpool's biggest gem's its people. And that's what gives the city its character.
Oh, what a lovely way to promote the city of Liverpool. Thanks for that. I noticed online that you have also been a big supporter of expanding rail services in your home city, and you showed a superb map of a future network. I wonder if you can maybe explain to us how the Merseyrail network is fairly unique and perhaps some of the ways it could be expanded.
Yeah, so Merseyrail, it's quite unique because technically it's part of the Merseyrail network, but it's operationally like a mini London Underground. I mean, we've got the Northern Line and the Middle Line running underground through the city centre, 5 underground stations, 2 of the oldest deep-level underground stations in the world, actually, at James Street and Houghton Square, date back to the 1880s. Mm-hmm. But what's really interesting is it's actually an unfinished network. Historically, we had 3 major city centre termini. We've got Lime Street, Exchange, Liverpool Central, and a 4th if we're including Birkenhead Woodside over the water. But in the 70s, they rationalised everything, and the Link and the Loop programme was about knitting those separate railways together into one integrated network. And so the Link linked Exchange and Liverpool Central and those routes into the city to create the Northern Line. And the Loop created the underground city centre loop for the Whittle Line. But in the 70s, the actual vision went a lot further than that. So we had the Edgehill Spur, which would have connected those lines approaching Lime Street from the east into Liverpool Central and the wider Merseyrail network, potentially allowing direct cross-river services through the city. That was never built, but fundamentally, it's still a very good idea. And even 50 years later, I think it's probably still the best plan for creating those cross-river services, albeit with some modifications, like a new dive under from James Street Platform 1 into Liverpool Central Low Level. That will enable those cross-river services because, obviously, the Northern Line's an intensively used and you can't have a flat junction there. So But actually, the ambition to keep expanding the network goes right the way back to the 1880s itself, when there were proposals to extend the Mersey Railway in both directions. Like, there was the plan to extend westward underneath Birkenhead and Tranmere to connect into the Liverpool to Wrexham line. And there was also a plan to extend northwards into the dock system. It was the pilot header tunnels were created just west of James Street, but obviously that never materialised. I think the war had something to do with that. But for me, it's partly about completing some of those missing pieces, and ultimately it's about building on them. So Liverpool and the way we move around the city region, it's changed enormously since those plans were drawn up. We shouldn't be building what was designed in the 70s. You know, we need to be asking about what we need for the next 50 years, because obviously things have moved on.
And there's quite a large number of abandoned rail tunnels in the city, aren't there? Could any of those be repaired and reused to expand the system?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's extraordinary amounts of disused tunnels underneath Liverpool, and like some of those tunnels are in remarkably good condition, others less so, but they're strategic assets that I think we should be looking very seriously about how they can be brought back into use. One of my major proposals that I've been developing and advocating for about 10 years now is the Sergeant Pepper Line. And that will be to reuse the Waterloo Tunnel, which is in great condition, the Canada Dock Tunnel and the Bootle Branch, and turn that into a high-capacity circle line for in North Liverpool. Basically, that will connect around 100,000 people. Wow. In areas such as like Anfield, Walton, Tubrook, Old Swan, with the city centre, and they have no direct rail access whatsoever at the moment. So the line that goes through, that's a freight branch. It's the only connection to the Port of Liverpool. So if we can have passenger and freight to coexist, we can create a high-capacity circle line. But the missing piece would be a new cut-and-cover tunnel that connects the western portal of the Waterloo Tunnel and the western portal of Canada Dock Tunnel. So we need a subsurface connection to connect those to be able to form the circle. And then you'd have interchanges then at Kirkdale on the Northern Line and the City and Whittle Lines as well, via new underground station in London Road and interconnecting subway to Lime Street. But it's a massive project that obviously we can't build it all at once, so it needs to be phased and sequenced properly. But the most important thing we can do now is safeguard the route through Pumpfields and Liverpool Waters before developments takes place above it. Liverpool Waters, you've got loads of skyscrapers getting built there, and we need to safeguard that land. Otherwise, it's going to be so much more difficult, nigh impossible to do it in the future. So, but it also gives us the opportunity to reuse the old Canada Dock goods station site, which is currently filled in with about 5 metres of fill. And that's the western portal of the Canada Dock tunnels also filled in there. So we can dig that out, expose the bridges underneath Bankhall Road and Derby Road, and then we can have a new TND there for the 777 fleet, dual voltage. And that will save the Sergeant Pepper Line and the City Line. It's the only place where we can have that TND around there. And so it's quite essential. But on the other side of the city, we've got the 1830 Wapping Tunnel as well, which it's not in very good condition now, but it's still an incredibly important asset. So what that can do, we can use that to complete the Edgehill Spur connection to enable those cross-river services. Then we can have services from like West Hirby to Wigan and Hooton to Liverpool South Parkway, maybe eventually on towards Widnes. But that would start breaking down the divide that we've currently got between, now all trains terminate at Lime Street and then you go onto the underground. So these aren't just abandoned Victoria tunnels. The transport corridors that will cost an absolute fortune if we built them from scratch today. So I think we should treat them as strategic assets for the city's future.
But these kind of plans are not rocket science. They just need a bit of thought, like you've obviously given it, and a bit of investment, and then they could probably come to fruition.
Absolutely.
After all the policy changes, Kayla, it looks like HS2 might even at least get some way further back up towards the northwest, could make it to Crewe even. What are your ideas for how Liverpool and Manchester could get re-included in the plans?
First and foremost, I think cancelling HS2 north of Birmingham was probably the biggest mistake of Rishi Sunak's premiership, to be honest. Mm. I don't know what he was thinking there. We know the West Coast Main Line's full north of Stafford, and we know we need the capacity, so it made no sense whatsoever cancelling it. But, you know, this is where we are, and, you know, we're now effectively talking about putting back something in that should have been cancelled in the first place. But for me, the ultimate goal in terms of capacity relief has to be Goulburn. So extending to crew is an important step, but it doesn't solve the problem fully. So at the moment, HS2 is going to join the West Coast Main Line at Handsacre, putting more pressure on an already constrained railway. And phase 2A would push that problem further north, but getting to Goulburn is where we really want to be. That's where, you know, we really start to see capacity released through Cheshire. And it also allows us to run more local and stopping services on the network. But I think we need to reorganise the structure of the northern phases going forward. So the Manchester leg with the original HS2 schemes, that's effectively been superseded now by the Liverpool to Manchester Railway. So for me, HS2 phase 2 should now be Handsacre to Goulburn, built to full high-speed specification. And actually, taking phase 2 all the way to Goulburn changes what we need to do at Crewe. So if the high-speed railway dumps everything at Crewe as phase 2A would, like every HS2 service continuing north would have to be fed through Crewe station and then back onto the West Coast Main Line, which means a much more substantial intervention at Crewe. But if phase 2 continues to Goulburn, we probably don't need to do as much there, which is why if we do a 5-mile bypass tunnel beneath Crewe so that all the main high-speed flows simply continue north without entering the station at all, and then that means that the only services that actually call at Crewe would leave the high-speed main line and then call at the station and rejoin afterwards. So by taking HS2 further north, we can simplify what we need to do at Crewe itself while still giving Crewe excellent high-speed connectivity.
You're making great sense here, Kayla. That sounds completely the right thing to do.
But getting the north-south spine, it's only part of the picture. You know, we need to make sure Liverpool and Manchester are properly integrated into that same high-speed network. So whatever we call Northern Powerhouse Rail, whether it's LMR, MPR, HS3, whatever, it still needs to be designed as part of that high-speed system and continue that high-speed specification. But if we're spending billions building a new railway primarily for capacity, why put chains on ourselves from day one and building it to a lower spec?
Absolutely.
If we build it properly now, our kids and grandkids will thank us for it later. If we build it properly now, it means we can deal with the bottlenecks as well. I mean, if you look at Warrington, you've got the slow approaches there, which will inevitably have to go over the Latchford Viaduct to get to Bank Quay. So if we have a high-speed bypass tunnel at Warrington, then that means that the high-speed non-stops can just completely bypass that section. Same situation at Crewe. And then the slow air stoppers can come off the main line and then rejoin it. So I think they should be seen as the essential system architecture, really, not just optional extras, because it's allowing the wider high-speed network to operate properly. But the railway is only half of it. No, we need terminal capacity as well. So HS2 is designed for 400-metre trains. So Lime Street, Piccadilly, and ultimately Glasgow Central, they all need to accommodate those 400-metre services. Mm. Otherwise, building this fantastic new high-speed capacity, high-capacity railway, and then, you know, you'll end up splitting trains halfway up the country simply so they can fit into the termini. So that's no way to run a 21st-century railway, is it? So we need to get those 400-metre trains into those stations. At Lime Street, I've developed a proposal where we can get 6 400-metre platforms into Lime Street.
Wow.
It means cutting into the rock. And, you know, we need to increase the span of the north shed from 70 to 100 metres. But crucially, we can do it without touching the edge of the throat. Mm. So we bring those high-speed lines on a completely new alignment into those 400 metre platforms, while the shorter trains, you know, using the route of 200 metres, they can diverge around Ditton and then continue up the West Coast Main Line and then into the platforms that's more appropriate for their length. People say Lime Street's too difficult, and that's why it hasn't been done. I mean, yeah, it is difficult. It's a major civil engineering project. There's no doubt about that. But if the navvies can excavate that cutting 200 years ago, there's no reason why we can't engineer it today. And we should be ambitious enough to do it.
Yeah, and hello, are not Old Oak Common and Euston major engineering projects too? I mean, if it's okay to build big in London, why can't we do it in Liverpool too?
Exactly. Well, Liverpool and Manchester, and Manchester's that requires a different solution. And I've proposed a stacked station approach there with MPR running through on a 400-metre underground through station at a low level. And then we need to have 6 400-metre platforms at high level for terminating HS2 services and potential future Eurostars as well. So it's got to be looked at as one system, and the high-speed railway, the bypass junctions, terminals. You know, there's no point in fixing one bottleneck to create another one 10 miles further up.
This all dovetails into your work, but let's talk about your most recent work as a transport strategist. You were the founder and director of North Star Rail Alliance. What's it all about?
So the North Star Rail Alliance, it really grew out of the transport work that I've already been doing independently for years. But its fundamental aim is to develop the kind of long-term transport strategy that I think we're missing far too often in this country. We have a tendency to look at individual projects in isolation, whereas I'm interested in where we want the network to be in 20, 30, 50 years' time and how we build towards that. So I'm developing strategies across Liverpool, the wider north, nationally, looking at everything from urban rail to high-speed rail and major strategic corridors and freight. But a huge part of it is safeguarding and sequencing what needs to happen first to enable what next, and what we need to do to protect that so the development doesn't prevent us from building the infrastructure that we're going to need tomorrow. So ultimately, it's about using transport infrastructure to support economic growth, regeneration, housing and better connectivity, rather than treating transport as the end itself.
Beautiful. Yeah, yeah. And all power to your elbow with that, Kayla. And you mentioned freight there, and freight often gets overlooked. How important is it to make sure it's properly integrated in all the plans?
Well, freight, it's absolutely crucial. It gets forgotten about far too often because the passenger services are obviously much more visible. My Sergeant Pepper line is a good example of that. The Bootle branch in Liverpool, as I said before, it's the only freight corridor, rail freight, into the port of Liverpool. So we can't just, say, put a high-capacity passenger railway on there. You know, we still need to accommodate those two trains an hour in each direction for freight. So that means widening part of the corridor to 3 and 4 tracks, bridge replacements, providing a diversion, an alternative route for freight, while the works take place, so ultimately passenger and freight can coexist reliably. Mm. But nationally, if we're serious about moving freight from road to onto rail and growing our ports, we need a proper national rail freight strategy. Freight is to be designed into the network from the start, not squeezed into whatever capacity is left afterwards, I think.
Integration seems to be kind of your calling card, Kayla. How do you believe that planning needs to be all-encompassing? And what does that mean for the passenger or the freight user?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think being eurodiverse probably plays a part in that. My brain naturally wants to connect everything together. So I find it difficult to look at one piece of infrastructure without immediately thinking, like, what's that need to connect into? What else can we do with it? And what does that enable 30 years down the line? I think the M67 corridor is probably the best example I can give for this, because we need to extend the M67 across the Pennines to meet the M1. I mean, that is the biggest structural gap in the motorway network today. We also need more trans-Pennine rail capacity too. So rather than treating those as two completely separate projects, why not integrate them? Mm. I've proposed a new multimodal wood-end-based tunnel, and it doesn't need to be 14 miles long. It needs to be 4 miles, carrying the M67 through the Pennines with a 4-track railway beneath the road deck, obviously 2 underneath the eastbound, 2 underneath the westbound. Those 4 tracks effectively become a 4-mile-long dynamic passing loop through the tunnel section in the heart of the Pennines. I mean, that's absolute gold dust. That allows faster intercity services to overtake the stopping and the freight. It turns the Woodhead into a high-capacity trans-Pennine corridor, essentially. Another example would be the Humber rail tunnel concept of mine, which for me is the missing piece of the rail network in the east of England. If you look at a map, you can almost see historically the network was built as if that connection should have been there. There's about 10 different services that one piece of infrastructure could enable, connecting from Anlaby to Gox Hill. They'd slash journey times between Hull, Scunthorpe, Grimsby by well over an hour. Mm. But what else is really exciting about the Humber rail tunnel is what it unlocks. I mean, if Andy Burnham's serious about building 1 million new homes in the UK, then the south bank of the Humber is an excellent place to start, because that one piece of infrastructure could be the catalyst that enables a whole new city to flourish on the south bank, wow, right in the centre of Hull, Grimsby and Scunthorpe. Mm. So you'd effectively create a Humber metropolitan city region with that new city at its heart. But that new city would have density as well. We're not talking about sprawling suburbia. Like, the ground conditions on the south bank means that all the buildings would need to be piled anyway. So we'd be looking at a minimum like 6-7 stories. So you're more like the density you see in European cities. I was actually talking with Gareth Denisov about this on a Zoom call a few weeks ago, and he said New Holland might be a good name for the city.
Oh, great.
The thing is, though, a new city on the South Bank, that has the ability to help rebalance the Northern powerhouse. I mean, Hull would no longer be an afterthought at the end of the M62, and places like Scunthorpe and Grimsby no longer forgotten about. Mm. I mean, they become part of a major metropolitan city region spanning both sides of the Humber then.
Wow, what a great idea.
That's what integration is to me. I mean, looking at transport, housing, regeneration, freight and economic growth all together and designing infrastructure around what that can enable over the next half century, rather than looking at each project in isolation.
Absolutely. We need some of this blue sky thinking. And the other idea that's been in the news a lot recently is how amazing it would be to get on a sleeper train in the Midlands or the Northwest and wake up in Paris or Amsterdam.
No, absolutely. I mean, that's ultimately where we want to go with this. International rail in Britain shouldn't begin and end in London. Once we've got HS1 and HS2 connected, there's no reason why we shouldn't be able to board a train in Liverpool, Manchester, Birmingham one evening and wake up the next morning in Paris and Amsterdam or even further into Europe. I've actually developed my own Nightstar modern network concept about this and how we can make it work, because there's a lot of obstacles around this, you know, especially around the border control issues and ultimately how we can operate an international sleeper network at scale. But I've had a proper good look at that. The exciting thing about the HS1, HS2 connector, you're not just connecting two bits of railway in London. You're connecting the north directly to Europe. But there's far more bigger examples of what the HS1, HS2 connector can do. You know, Old O'Common doesn't have to be the terminus of HS2 during the pre-Euston incident. We could through run HS2 services through to HS1 or even to a double turn back pocket at York Way, 400 metre turn back pocket. Mm-hmm. So that would increase the amount of services that can pass through Old O'Common from day one. So waiting for Euston to come online 7 years later, you don't have to do that. Just build the connector and then we can run through some services through to Ashford or even Margate or Ramsgate from Liverpool and Manchester. I mean, obviously, we need to address the bottlenecks in the crew and Stafford area as well, which come from extended up to Goulbourne. But it means that from day one, we open with a much larger network. And I think that's absolutely needs to be included in the VSAT.
There is a tiny piece of elevated single track, I think, between Euston and St Pancras, isn't there? And that was put there when HS1 was built, wasn't it?
The original concept was for a single track railway to connect Primrose Hill to, or HS2 to, yeah, HS1. Now, that was dropped in 2014. Mm. But thing is, what's a single track going to get you? I mean, it's great for night stars because you're only going in one direction in the evening and coming back one direction in the morning. But if we want to scale the Eurostar network, then it breaks immediately because you can only run a couple of services on there. Plus, you know, if you want to run domestic services. So the concept that I've come up with is to grade separate Camden West Junction. And this is where it needs to start from, really. So we've got the North London line, and then you've got a double track choke point. So if we amend the viaduct at Kentish Town Road, and then we have four platforms at Camden Road, then the freight and the London Underground, that's the North pair, and then the HS2, HS1 connector, that's the South pair. So you've got complete grade separation there, and it's double track, which is exactly what we want. But the most important thing that we need to do is we need to get that portal connection from HS2 to the Primrose Hill portal. It's a little 1 kilometre stub. I mean, even if it doesn't go anywhere, it stops dead at a portal. That's passive provision. Mm-hmm. And then it means that, you know, we don't have to go back to a live railway 10 years down the line, and disruption and the cost will just be astronomical. So we need to get that connection in there. And then if we grade separate Camden West Junction, half of it's done already then.
Yeah.
That's literally half of it done already. I mean, we will have to, Juniper Gardens or Juniper Crescent would have to be CPO acquisition. Mm-hmm. But what it unlocks, it's
worthwhile more in the long run, yeah.
Absolutely, and it's in the national interest to do that, so...
I'm not sure if you're going to answer this, given all your close ties to rail operators and the construction industry, but everybody seems to want to know, how the heck are we so unable to deliver big projects on time and on budget? Is there some kind of shady corporation bleeding the state dry?
No, I don't think there's a shady corporation anywhere bleeding. Well, it's more structural than that, isn't it? I mean, we're terrible in this country for stop-start major infrastructure projects and changing scope halfway through and redesigning things, delaying decisions. And, you know, every time we do that, the industry loses skills and supply chains and contractors. So what we really need is we need a rolling program. We've got to keep the workforce in place and the skills. So, I mean, HS2 is probably the ultimate example, isn't it? And we've spent enormous amounts of money developing a railway, cancelling a huge part of it, and then we're talking about building some of it back in again. So phase 2A should have been green lit the second the Act of Parliament went through.
Yeah,
literally just crack on. Mm-hmm. But I think we need to have much more certainty, a proper long-term pipeline, as I said.
Yeah.
We need to get much better at deciding what we're going to build and sticking to it and delivering it more efficiently, basically.
Yeah. Well, Kayla, it sounds like we could carry on talking about our favourite subjects for ages, but we must pull into a station now.
Oh, thanks, Mark. No, I've really enjoyed that. Thanks for having me on, giving me the opportunity to share some of the ideas that I've been working on. Hopefully we'll see a lot of it built one day. But it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for explaining your wonderful and very crucial work to us. And you can follow Kayla Bibby on social media. That's KaylaBibby. Join us next time for more chatting art, transport, communications history on Vectis Radio 104.6 and DAB.